Welcome, listeners, to A Night of Shreds and Patches, an immersive actual play podcast. This episode features the talents of
Cameron Robertson as Emma Blackwood,
Sydney Whittington as Cassidy Shard,
Nick Robertson as GM and narrator.
Hello, listeners. This is your editor, Sydney, with today's messages. Ree, the voice of Pally, and the rest of her crew, with your help on the Kickstarter, have officially launched The City That Never Dies, a Blades in the Dark actual play podcast with a Roaring Twenties-inspired twist. Set in Imperial City, follow the Whiskey Jays, a gang of smugglers trying to get by and pay off their debts amid the glitz, glamour, and corruption of the capital. The link to listen can be found in the show notes. And for this podcast, auditions are still open for another 2 weeks to put your name in the hat to be a new cast member. We have a full-time spot open, but even if you only have availability to guest, if you're interested in getting paid to record with the Patna, put in an application, and we'll be sure to remember you when we start thinking about possibilities. The link can be found in the show notes or on our Twitter. And with that, we wrap up today's announcements and head into episode 23, People with Ideals. And so, join us. For now, our tale to yours attaches, to carry hope, a night of shreds and patches.
Reconfiguring audio connection.
Last time, on a night of shreds and patches, we return to my home of Eagle Hill after an exciting train adventure, of which I was very involved in a role of moral support. And we went to see a baseball game. We talked of the politics of my hometown, as well as the interesting biology of the giant lobsters. And then we said goodbye to our friend Monet.
We open on Emma and Cassidy, driving the rig out of town with Modem. It is time to fulfill your contract with him. It's time to bring him to the established Advantia Enclave north of Eagle Hill. The drive takes less than an hour, but in the dark, seems to take longer. What does the land, illuminated by the headlights of the rig and the shattered moon above, look like around you?
The road between Eagle Hill and the Advantia Enclave is actually pretty nice. It has the air of it used to be really good, and then it kind of stopped being used often, but it was well maintained for a while. So there's the little bits of vegetation and stuff sticking through, but it is a much smoother road than the Patna tends to be on a lot of the time. And it's almost as luxurious of a driving experience as can be had. Because there's no one on this road, even at around the middle of the night, which it's a fairly big city to have no one be here. So it's pleasant.
And as you left, you saw that the city of Eagle Hill itself was still bustling. It's one of those places that never really quiets all the way down. But out here, that sound has faded to nothing. Just the rumble of the rig alone in the dark.
Do we think we've changed back into normal clothes?
I think Emma kept on one of her sparkly barrettes, but otherwise is back in her normal cozy sweater and cargo pants.
Yeah, Cassidy is back in her canvas jacket and her utilitarian pants. Her hair, instead of being done all the way up into her normal braid, is just pulled back over her shoulders in a long ponytail. You can still see the definition in the curls and the time that she put into it, but it's mostly just out of the way right now.
We see Cassidy and Emma's faces illuminated by the lighting of the instrument panel on the rig. The dim green lights show that you all look tired. You've been through a lot today and you're still not done.
So seating configuration-wise, Cassidy's probably driving.
Yeah.
Emma will take the back seat and is just sitting in the middle, leaning up so that she's got one elbow on each of the front seats. So she's kind of in the front with y'all, so she can still hear everything.
An advantage of looking as gaunt and weathered as Modem does is that while Cassidy and Emma look tired and wrung out, the evidence of the day's activities showing plainly on them, Modem looks about the same, staring out the window, watching the low rolling hills by the ocean.
So, Modem, are you excited to be back?
I've dreamed of this day for a long time, but I do have to admit that I feel some trepidation at the thought of actually coming back to the Enclave.
Well, because you left not entirely of your own accord, right?
It was advised to me that volunteering for a more remote post might be best, and I did take that advice. But the Advantia does not assign people to locations permanently. We are encouraged to go where our research might take us. Unfortunately, we are also required to inform the Enclave of our travels and our current work. That is something I have not done in quite a while.
Why not?
It would be a little illogical, wouldn't it, not to tell your organization what you're working on or what you're doing. I must confess to a bit of childish petulance at my assignment and how life has treated me. Maybe I was thinking about leaving, but I've decided to stay. The things I have discovered must be put forward, to forward humanity and the Advantia. If I were to leave, it would be a loss to humanity as a whole, and I cannot do that.
I kind of figured that once you'd made the decision that you were coming back, at that point, it would make sense to tell them you were coming, right? And give them updates on travel plans?
That would have been wise. But I did not. I was out of the habit, and frankly, my long-distance communication is non-functional and has been for some time.
Are they going to be happy to see you, or do we need to stop outside and get a safe distance? Like, how... Cassidy looks briefly back over her shoulder at their entire livelihoods and the technological wonders. Looks back to the road. Are we good to drop you off, or...
The Advantia does not attack visitors. You have done nothing wrong. You and your possessions should be safe.
Should be?
Will be safe.
Thank you.
I worry only for my standing in the organization.
But, like, your standing wasn't great to begin with, right? That's why you volunteered to get sent to Wawa?
His face sags and he slumps against the door in the window with a thump. Yes, that is true. Thank you for bringing that up. I feel really good about that.
Hey, I'm just saying that it's not likely to go down anymore.
You would be surprised.
But you're bringing so much knowledge.
I assume that that is what happens. But though one can rise meteorically in the Advantia to further your station through knowledge and wisdom, so too can one fall far, far lower than the Advantia might treat outsiders.
I mean, falling is normally what meteors do, right?
I do not know. Astronomy was not part of my study.
Oh, okay.
And as you all lapse into silence, Modem is issuing an aura of discomfort that's a little contagious. Although you do believe him when he says that you all are safe, that does line up with what you know of the Advantia, especially in this region. And after some more quiet driving, he sits up, his previous discomfort forgotten, and says, "There it is! The campus! It's been so long!" And the rig pulls up to your destination. It rose out of the darkness surprisingly quickly for its size. And it's not like what you expected at all. There are stone walls all the way around it in a large circle. It seems that the campus, as Modem calls it, is about the size of a small town. And the walls are very high and obviously fortified. You can see several young men and women standing on the walls that appear to be well-armed. The area around the walls is lit with low spotlights, and there's also lighting up the sides of the walls. So if you had come from a different direction where it wouldn't have been blocked by the rise and fall of the elevation, one might even say that the Advantia Cloister is like a city on a hill, well lit for people to aspire to. You pull up to the gate and you see somebody with a buzz cut and a hawk nose, lit by the splash of the lights of the rig, step out of a small guardhouse by the main gate and wave and look in. They seem to be just doing a check to make sure that you're not a threat, but they don't seem particularly detailed. But they do make note of Modem, and you see them touch their hand to the side of their ear and murmur something quietly before the gate swings open and they wave you all in to drive forward, and they step back into the guardhouse.
While the guard's walking back to the post, Cassidy gives a quick glance to Modem and just is like, hey, as you're about to go dump all your intel on your buddies, just remember who is going to get affected by what you tell.
Yes. I take the information that I have gained that would affect others negatively very seriously. I promise that nothing will be spoken of those things. And you could see he stopped himself before he said anything that might have been overheard or had people to have more questions.
Cassidy holds eye contact with him for like 2 seconds.
It's kind of like staring at a fish. He's frowny right now, but he has these large dark eyes sunk back in his head, and he doesn't blink very often. And you do a better job gauging his emotion and what he's thinking by his hand gestures and his posture than by his face. So holding eye contact with him just feels weird because he's usually very expressive when he speaks. But if you're just looking at him, it's hard to tell what he's thinking.
Cassidy holds it until the gate is finished opening and then looks forward and drives again. There's not specifically a note of acknowledgement, but there's not disagreeance in her posture either.
The road beyond the gate is a wide, slow curve that leads up to a main building of this campus. If you were surprised by the outside of the Advantia Enclave, the inside is even stranger. Everything is well lit. There are wide, green, well-manicured lawns. And the buildings that you can see are all tall and made of long curves and white architecture. Some of them appear to be of some sort of synthetic material. Some appear to be stone. And the main building is a large tower that's tall enough that it must overlook the nearby ocean. You're just close enough that you can catch a tinge of salt on the wind. As you pull up towards the main building, you're signaled by another robed figure to stop and to climb out of the vehicle.
Cassidy gives a glance back to Emma with the, all right, and starts climbing out.
It's very quiet here in the Enclave this late at night. You can hear the ticking of the rig's engine as it cools. Your headlights are still on, splashing over the front doors of this large tower. And the person who signaled you to get out is a woman with a shaved head. She has black skin and warm eyes, and she smiles at you as you all climb down. Her smile drops off her face as she sees Modem, but quickly reappears as she says, "Scribe Modem, you will follow me." And Modem gulps and says, "I trust that everything is in order." "Well, that will really depend on what information you've brought us, as you well know." And Modem looks surprised that they would assume that, but this is the culture of the Advantia. Of course, they assume if someone is going outside of the norm that they must have something interesting to report. And the other Advent smiles coolly at Emma and Cassidy and says, "You can wait here. We may have questions after the scribe has reported. There will be further payment once we have gathered all relevant information. If you will please be patient."
Sure.
Cassie just nods, leans against the truck in a well-practiced, slightly impatient but willing to sit posture. She's tired.
You have that feeling of your head getting heavier and you're so tempted to lean it back flat on the window, but you know if you do that, the next step will be for your eyes to close, and the next step will be you falling over.
Yeah, Cassidy, even with Modem's assurances and what she knows of the adventure, they should be fine. But still, this is their stuff that's nice and shiny for these adventure. They're in the walls. She's not quite comfortable enough to doze idly, but it's been a long day. She looks over at Emma. How's your first impression of an adventure compound? Have you ever seen one of these?
No, I haven't seen one of these before.
Cool, me neither.
I didn't know what the Advantia were before we met Modem, but it's very clean?
Yeah.
I guess.
I mean, they have different standards for themselves than I think people elsewhere do in a couple of ways.
Emma has reached the point of tiredness where suddenly you have energy again. And if you were to go and try to sleep now, you would just lay there and be angry at yourself because you can't sleep, but you're so tired. The adrenaline has kicked back in and nope, you are awake now. You're still super tired, but your brain doesn't realize that. And she is actively looking around because she's learned a lot of cool technology things from Modem and is trying to see if there's anything of interest out in the open beyond just the green grass and the white buildings, and is just wandering around. She cannot sit still anymore.
You actually see a couple of really interesting things while you continue to talk with Cassidy, your head on a swivel. You notice that the guards, you don't get the impression that this is their main job, but you can't think of any other name for them. The guards that are on the wall and by the various gates and entryways are all holding, they have to be weapons, but none of them are the same shape. Some glow faintly in the light. Some appear to be shiny. Some appear to be what must be a bladed weapon, but with bits of wiring and things hanging off of it. Everybody seems to have their own unique armament that's on guard duty. And another thing you see, one of the smaller buildings, you see a window open on the third floor and a robed figure start to slide down the wall, having climbed out of the window slowly and then faster and faster before, with a thump, they land on their butt on the ground. And as they turn around, you can see that they're wearing strange and bulbous goggles. And they make eye contact with you, Emma, and then push the goggles up on their head and wave embarrassedly at you and then walk in the front door of the building.
Emma waves back and it's a little bit too excited.
The Advantia that you have seen experimenting, maybe pulling a prank, hard to tell, but the enthusiasm of your wave causes them to smile in the light before heading back inside.
It's really quiet.
I mean, it is. Cassidy thinks about asking Zio for the time and then can't, and then looks at the sky, which is dark, and just says, "It's late, I suppose. I don't know what time schedules Advantia keep. Not every Advantia is the same brand of Advantia as Modem is, having known a couple of other ones."
I mean, that makes sense. I have a hard time imagining a group of people together all being like Modem.
I mean, there's lots of rituals, and sometimes the group ritual brings people closer together. I think out where I'm from, I tended to meet the ones that weren't in for the group rituals, but if they're following some strict schedule of be awake at sunrise for the holy salutations or whatever, they're maybe they're doing that, and some of them are jumping out of buildings.
Yeah, that was weird. They moved slower than I would anticipate someone falling out of a building.
I suppose that could be their experiment.
It looked like it was on purpose. Do they not have stairs in that building, do you think?
Well, they went back in the front door, so. If they're going back up to that room, that's probably their lab.
Yeah, that's weird.
At the edge of the lights that run along this main driveway, you can see what looks like some sort of garden but all of the plants are in plastic or terracotta or some even glass pots. And somebody wearing a loose-fitting cotton button-down shirt and shorts is walking around in that garden. You've noticed them as they get closer to the edge of the garden, and they're looking up at the moon and carefully rotating certain plants 5 degrees one way, another one 15 degrees another, and you make out a bright white blossom, maybe some sort of lily, that this person picks up and sets into a pool of moonlight before nodding authoritatively to themselves and taking notes on a notepad. All of this is done very peacefully, very quietly. You get the impression that this place must be bustling during the day, but there's only a few stragglers who operate at night.
How's the weather?
It's less cold than what you felt lately being near the ocean. The wind is broken by the wall. You feel very comfortable, but you're also wearing jackets.
This person in shorts and a shirt is very acclimated.
Mm-hmm. Cassidy, you can't help but fight down the feeling that if you got closer, you might see that they're wearing flip-flops, even though it's the beginning of winter.
I don't know how people can tolerate the cold like this. Maybe it's just because I didn't grow up in it, but...
Yeah, I mean, so I've always been cold. I tend to just be cold all the time, regardless of weather, but it never super gets that warm in Thunder Bay. But when you're in a climate that stays more on the cold end, when you have a day that is a significantly higher temperature than it normally is, it becomes warm to you, and you just kind of have to embrace it as your warm day.
I mean, it wasn't too bad earlier at the baseball game, but I guess there was also a lot of people close, and we were in streetcars.
Yeah, it's not as cold as it was in Tree Owl Mountain.
That's true.
But, I mean, I'm not going to be wearing shorts.
Yeah. Cassidy leans up off the truck, having seen Emma's tired energy, and does a slow just once over of the rig, still talking with Emma, but looking for like any dings on the side that would happen from the cranes. Not that there's not all kinds of random scratches and gouges from driving this thing through woods, but just as a keeping her feet and her hands busy.
And Cassidy, you have a deep understanding of what the rig looks like and what condition it's in. Because this is your home, this is how you make your living, you look at it very frequently, and you feel confident that if there was new damage or dings or scratches, you would notice it, but you can't help but think about how Pally really knew the rig. Without even looking, she could tell if there was new damage or things like that. But you're shaken from that reverie by noticing some marks in the road dust that show where this crane had clamped down. And it hasn't even scratched the paint. Whoever loaded the rig and then unloaded the rig was incredibly skilled.
Over the course of this, Cassidy sees that and nods to herself and puts a hand on the fish in a gear mark on the side of the rig that showed this was Pally's. This is one of Pally's many babies, but this was Pally's baby. Hey, Emma, do you ever get told the story of this logo?
No.
This is Pally's maker's mark. It's a fish because she was a fisher.
That does make sense.
But this is, if you see this on our stuff, this is on a lot of our stuff. It's on my bow. This is, you know, history.
Yeah, I guess, well, for the time being, we don't have a fisher anymore.
Yeah. We need to figure out what we want to do. But Cassidy looks around at the not quite guards on the walls, but the light and the foreign architecture, and looks back at him and goes, I don't think this is the spot either. It's quieter than the game, but I hesitate to think that no one's listening necessarily.
Yeah, I think I'm slightly too tired to have that conversation right now and think that hard.
Cassidy also yawns in echo. Yeah, I agree. I am about ready to be out of here, I think. I Cassidy looks around to see if any of these other shaven-headed Advantia members look like they're doing anything besides gardening.
You don't see much. The glimpses of people you see are either on patrol on the walls or the eccentric gardener nearby. But on the other side of the rig, you hear the gentle swish of steps through the manicured grass. And before long, you see a figure step into the light around the rig. She is grumbling a little bit, and you see that she's wearing low heels and that walking through the yard has gotten them a little wet with dew, and that the footing wasn't the best and she had wobbled a little. She's average height, is wearing a navy blue suit with a knee-length pencil skirt, and has pale skin and sharp features, and her brown hair is pulled back into a no-nonsense bun, and she's holding what looks like a leather-clad day planner, and she clicks a ballpoint pen several times as she sees you, and she says, "Oh, hi, here you are. I was coming out here to find you, actually. I'm glad that you're still here. Sorry for the delay. I am under the understanding that you're responsible for bringing Modem back to us."
Yep. Sorry. Yep.
We've had a long day.
Well, his story was extremely interesting, I do have to say. I have a few questions for you, if you don't mind, and we'll get you paid and get you out of here. How does that sound? And she clicks the pen a couple more times and flips open the day planner.
I suppose. What kind of questions?
Oh, nothing much. Just some clarification. He told quite a story about drones and combat, and I just wanted to hear from you who you are, a little bit more about you, get to know you a little bit. For instance, she splays the hand holding the pen against her chest, and you can see that there's a white dress shirt under the suit jacket that's buttoned snugly. And she says, "My name's Susan. Nice to meet you. And you are?"
I'm Cassidy. That's Emma.
Nice to meet you, Cassidy. Emma, does Cassidy always speak for you?
No. Emma yawns again.
Oh, I can see.
Her energy is crashing now.
I'm sure it's been quite a journey coming all the way from... Where did you all start out?
Today?
No, I'm more interested in origins, I suppose. It's not every day that you see a group of mercenaries this high-functioning that would also help out a member of the Advantia rather than rob them and leave them to die in a ditch somewhere.
Wow. That happens?
The world's a scary place, Emma.
Oh, great. Well, I started in Thunder Bay.
Oh, Thunder Bay. Lovely town there. No real Advantia presence out there, though, if I'm right.
Yeah, no.
I think, if I recall, I have a head for organization and names. I do think they had a pretty talented mechanic, though. Jackie something, right?
Yep.
Cassidy has her eyebrows raised like, have you been to Thunder Bay?
Oh, no. But you hear things, you know. I talk to people like you all the time. I gather what information I can. I find it very interesting. The day-to-day of a conclave like this might look exciting, but it's usually pretty boring, honestly. That's why I came to talk to you all. I insisted to be the one to pay you myself, because I just wanted to get to know you a little bit. You never know when we might have more work for you, right? Mercenaries always like more work. She smiles in a way that looks pretty genuine, but you get the feeling like she's laughing at a joke that you didn't understand. Like, she's being friendly, and you get the feeling that she doesn't mean you any ill will. It's not that she doesn't like you. You think that she even probably wants the best for you, but there's some other stuff going on here.
Cassidy just gives the polite smile, the business smile, and just goes, "You know, mercenaries are ever in need of work."
Cassidy, I don't think I caught where you're from originally.
I'm kind of from all over. I grew up in the West, the Southwest, and then kind of came North, and then kind of went East. And now I'm here. But grew up is, I guess, a relative term, so I don't know that I claim that anything is a hometown.
A rambling gambling gal, huh?
I try not to gamble if I can avoid it.
A wise choice. She smiles and looks like she's collecting herself a little bit. She says, "I do have one other thing that really interests me. And I don't want you to take this question the wrong way, but where did you get that piece of technology you got in the back of that truck there?
Oh, that radio? That was one that our old mechanic, you know, salvaged out of a bunch of scrap and barely got it working again.
She nods and takes notes diligently as you're saying that. She goes, uh-huh. But no, I'm talking about that war machine that you've got in the back. The one that could potentially change the progression of civilization in these parts. You didn't think you would drive into an Advantia conclave and that there wouldn't be some sort of sensors scanning your ride on the way in, did you?
Sorry, but that seems like a really bad way for civilization to go.
Cassidy shifts immediately to a defensive posture with her arms crossed in between this lady and her rig.
Whoa. She puts both hands up. The day planner has been folded and she sets it on the hood of the rig because you're standing up by the front cab. And she puts both her hands up and looks at you and says, I said I didn't want you to take the wrong way. It's purely curiosity. You have my word that you're going to leave with everything you came in with, except Modem, of course. We'll be transferring him to work on his new research. It's really quite promising. I just can't help but see something like that and wonder where it came from.
No, it was the people found it in the woods. It's not really a good landmark for where? The woods north and west? Emma, to present a united front, has now been here with the Patina the entire time. She is not new.
She nods, and you can see as her smile widens a little bit and becomes a little more forced that she's wearing a natural tone of lipstick that you didn't notice before. And she says, okay, that's fine. I was just hoping to make some contacts and learn a little bit more about you. I understand that this kind of responsibility comes with a lot of surprises and a lot of things you'd rather not talk about. So
it's not that I don't want to talk about it. It's legit. There's not a good marker to give you. There was a shed in the woods.
Wow. It's crazy to think about the fact that something like this could just be sitting out there waiting to be found, isn't it?
Yeah, but the fact that it was there to be found is probably because it was way out in the middle of nowhere.
Just the wonders that this world hides that we can discover. It's why I'm here, I guess.
Emma's continuing to tell the story about where they found the knight because she is completely telling the truth because this is all she knows about it. So there's no deception at all. So it comes across very genuine.
Cassidy is not adding any detail to the story at all. Cassidy is content to let Emma give her hearsay version of events.
She nods again, looks at her day planner, looks back and says, okay, I can tell that I've put you on edge, and for that I do apologize. We owe you a great debt having brought Modem back to us, especially with the information he has. So how about this? And she pulls out a small parchment envelope that looks like it's been folded over and sealed. It's a square shape. And she hands it out in between Emma and Cassidy. Payment for services rendered. A tip, maybe.
Cassidy takes it and slides it into the inside of her jacket. Happy to be of service.
Well, if you like the kind of pay that's in that envelope there, or just want to help make the world a better place, do me a favor. The next time you hear Moon River, find the nearest Advent. They may have some work for you.
We will keep it in mind. Cassidy hasn't relaxed her body language.
Well, it was very nice to meet you, Cassidy and Emma. And she holds out a hand to both of you to shake.
Emma shakes it very, not enthusiastically, but energetically.
And she withdraws her hand from that handshake and rotates towards Cassidy, holding it out, smile still broad on her face.
Cassidy takes it and shakes, solid handshake, making eye contact with Susan and just looking.
And Susan nods to herself, picks up her day planner and her pen off the hood of the rig. Looks like she's making a mental note of something and says, you two have a good night and safe travels. And she turns and she walks the few steps up the driveway and into the main door of the tower. And it shuts almost silently and she's gone.
All right, let's get out of here. Cassidy immediately turns to start opening the door and climbing up into the rig.
Emma runs around the cab to climb into the passenger side.
This is the emptiest you've ever felt the cab of the rig. just the two of you, and it takes a second to adjust to that lack of warmth, that lack of the cluster of bodies.
Emma scoots the seat forward.
And Casty, you're able to turn the rig around. You drive back to the gate. You can't see anybody manning the gate from the shadows, but it swings open and you're able to pull through and off into the night with no trouble, no slowdowns, no questions.
Once they get through that gateway and into just the darkness, Cassidy takes a deep breath of relief.
She seemed like the type of person to know what animal she would be.
Cassidy just breaks out laughing at this tension break and almost has to, she does pull over to the side of the road. Like, they get far enough away down the road that the trees and the hills have obscured the conclave, but she pulls off to the side of the road and just cracks up, barely holding it together through the exhaustion and the stress of this day.
Emma looks pleased that she made Cassidy laugh.
Cassidy just takes a couple of minutes to slowly recompose herself with a couple of bouts of just tired giggling. It's that late night. Everything is funny, including laughing at yourself at things being funny. And she finally stops and looks up with tears in her eyes and looks at Emma and goes, do you want to stop somewhere between here and Eagle Hill and we can just camp out for one more night before we get into the city life and the hubbub? And I don't want to drive anymore.
Yeah, I do not have the energy to try to find a place in the city to stay tonight.
Yeah, let's...
And to park the rig. No.
Cassidy quickly takes out one of the maps that it's the large area map of the whole region from Trial Mountain down to here. So it's only approximate, but it does have the shape of the coast. And Cassidy finds their road and basically looks for the closest piece of coastline and starts driving. And the road goes from nice to still paved to dirt. And then it kind of just runs out. But it looks like an intentional end of the road and puts the parking brake on, kills the engine and goes, all right, let's camp. Cassidy makes sure that the rig headlights are aimed towards where she is pretty sure there's going to be water, hops out and starts getting her tent and Emma's tent stuff unloaded out of the thing. This is the fewest number of tents they've had to set up in a while. And looks at Emma and then does the head nod towards where she's pretty sure that water is.
Yeah, so you park the rig. The woods are quiet except for the sea breeze rustling through the mostly bare trees. You walk and dirt quickly turns to sand, quickly turns to rock, quickly turns back to hard-packed sand. As you make it through the trees and out to your first unobstructed view of the ocean. And it's dark, but the moon is reflecting off of the waves like liquid silver, and the wind ruffles your hair.
Well, Emma, we made it. And Cassidy chucks down the tent packs onto the ground.
It looks like a really big lake.
Yeah. It looks like water. It smells like salt.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe in the morning it'll look like something else. But Cassidy does take the few steps forward and reach down to touch her fingertips into the water.
The water is colder than you expected, but you've done what you set out to do. You've touched the ocean.
I don't know how I feel about touching it now that I know that there's giant lobsters in it.
Well... Maybe wait till the morning then when you can see that there aren't any.
Yeah.
And Cassidy just starts doing the autopilot setting up of this tent like she's done hundreds of times because she's so tired that that's all her brain has left now.
And the two of you with little ceremony climb into your tents. Cassidy, you fall asleep almost immediately with the much practice of somebody who knows to rest when they can. And Emma, you sit staring into the dark, wondering why, when you're this tired, it's this hard to finally fall asleep.
I think this is something that happens fairly often to Emma. So she starts doing some deep breathing exercises and just listening to the waves. And even if she's not falling asleep, at least she is relaxing her body. So some rest is happening, but eventually she'll fall asleep if she just lays here long enough.
You're used to having trouble falling asleep, but something about the salty air and the sound of the waves and your routine to help you find that rest does put you out faster than you would expect. And we see Emma with the gentle glow of sunlight on the outside of her tent wake back up after sleeping. She's not sure how long, but she does feel better.
Emma gets up, gets out of her sleeping bag and puts her jacket back on, huddles down into it a little bit in the chilly morning, and steps out of her tent and looks out towards the ocean.
Outside, just sitting on the shore with her knees up and her feet out in front of her, is Cassidy, just looking out at the ocean with the sun a reasonable distance above the horizon now, watching the waves.
Emma walks over and not very gracefully plops down next to Cassidy in the sand and crosses her legs.
And Cassidy looks over with a nod of acknowledgement and looks back out of the ocean. It's a little bit more impressive in the light.
Yeah, I guess now that you can see how far it goes, makes a difference.
Yeah, it goes as far as you can
as
see.
As it goes, yeah.
Yeah, I have seen big water, but I have not seen the ocean until now.
Your view is broken by one interesting feature that you can see in the distance. You can see past it to the horizon, but there's some sort of wall, white line. The sun glints off of it. You're not sure even what it's made out of, but there seems to be some sort of barrier that stretches almost from horizon to horizon.
Is that a wall?
It looks like a wall. I think that's the Eagle Hill seawall. It's made of or grown from coral. It's unclear as a person who doesn't live here, but my understanding is they use it to keep the tides and stuff in this area under control, because part of their power infrastructure and stuff here comes from playing with the waves. As big as the ocean is, someone has been able to tame it.
Yeah, you got a lot of power there. I guess controlling the tides makes sense, because we did go over that big bridge.
We did.
To get to the city.
Yeah.
From the train station. Huh. I wonder why they built the city here. It seems like it'd be easier to just go inland slightly to not be worried about the fact that your city's an island.
That is a good question.
Maybe they like the view.
It's a good view. And Cassidy just watches the small waves breaking on the shore. Nothing of great intensity, but it's white noise. All right, well, I suppose this is the point at which we need to decide what we're doing. Because we have us. We have months until if Wyatt and Zio can meet up again. I mean, we're not in a position to take mercenary work. I don't even, there's so much unknown right now, and this is not my...
Has this ever happened before? That y'all got split up?
Not like this. Not with the, I mean, we've gone separate ways to take alternate approaches on missions that have taken a couple days, but we haven't been split like this.
I guess it would be kind of hard to get split up to this magnitude in normal situations.
Yeah, there's not a lot of one-way transportation across mountains, but I guess, you know, yeah. We got perfectly lucky here. I don't like not having them here.
It is really weird. No one has yelled my name in, like, I don't know, we're approaching 24 hours. We're probably at, like, 18 hours, and it's weird.
I mean, I've had Wyatt I've been following Wyatt for like 5 years. And Pally was here that whole time until recently. And Zio has been around for a couple of years. And Yokua was around until kind of recently. And Gwen and Owen. I was the kid 6 months ago. Now I'm the old one? That's not how this is supposed to work, Emma.
Yeah, you're now my distinguished elder. Especially since we got rid of the 400-year-old.
He was a very old 35-year-old.
He can't be 35. I still refuse to believe that. That's no. Also, did you notice that the rest of the Avantia don't dress like him? Susan was wearing a suit.
Yeah, I'm actually a little bit surprised that more of the ones here weren't dressed like him, but Susan, I guess, sounded like she's a traveler. Maybe she's one of the chill ones, like the ones that I've worked with.
Anyway, that was just an interesting observation.
Yeah.
Are you doing okay?
I don't want to be in this position, Emma.
Yeah.
Cassidy looks over for a second and points to her scar that's through her right eyebrow. This didn't come from the Patna. I led a group before joining the Patna. I helped. It was a group of people with ideals, and I was the combat experienced one, and I did my best to teach them how to fight, and they were confident in their ability to fight. And then we, you know, try to go right or wrong, and all of a sudden, I'm left with a scar and no friends. That was 5 people that I led in to go die. I mean, they knew how to fight, but they didn't. I didn't get to teach them discipline, I guess. But like, that's not how that's what should work. And now I'm here with my young apprentice.
Yeah. At least this time you're not alone. If we're trying to put a positive spin on it, it could have been just one of us who made the train, and
that would be terrible. I hope they're okay.
I mean, they're going to do remembrances. I feel like that shouldn't... We shouldn't have cause for concern for their welfare.
Yeah.
But I don't know what took them so long.
Well, and we got the message from Zio. Something you can't split up something. But I don't know if that was... It was them. But whether it was a message for us or something else... The way it faded out, they weren't on the train. And that means... Yeah, I don't know. They're not... Between the two of them, they didn't have a lot of excuse to not be punctual, which is a bad sign.
Yeah. I guess we can be pretty confident that they didn't leave us on purpose.
Yeah.
Especially since we have all of Wyatt's stuff.
Yeah. So, I mean, as the great wisdom of our leader told us, a Merc company is an exosuit and a sharpshooter. We have the personnel. I don't think we have the expertise, but I don't think we're like 100% screwed in the meantime. But we could also look for someone else. We have money now. And Cassidy pulls that envelope back out of her jacket and folds it open to show Emma the variety of bright and highly denominated pieces of stitch. We have options if we... What do you want to do, Emma? You're now the second ranking member of the Patna on site.
Oh, gosh. I'm moving up the ranks real quick.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't want to leave Eagle Hill, because then how would they find us?
Yeah.
Unless y'all set up a thing like when you go somewhere, a carnival or a fair, and your family's like, all right, so if we get separated, go and talk to the nearest person in uniform or whatever. Like, unless y'all have something like that set up, I think that being at the train station when the next train comes in is really that's the time to catch them.
Yeah, that seems like a plan. Unfortunately, we didn't plan that far ahead. I don't know that since having Zio in the company that we were ever out of radio range.
Yeah. Well, and I guess going to the train station is assuming that they can get enough money for the train tickets.
That's true, but they have 6 months.
They don't have any gear, though. Although I guess they have Zio, so.
Yeah, I was like, Zio
is their own gear, so.
I suspect that having seen Wyatt in action, if he needs to, he can field a choir or take a job, go bounce for a bar or something for a couple nights. So, okay. So we stay here. I mean, we came here for jobs.
Yeah.
Obviously, yeah, the makeup has changed, but there should be work. Whether shooting work or whatever other kind of work we have. Mechanics or, I mean, I have surveyed for smaller towns, I guess. If they need maps or they need trees climbed. As much fighting as you've done in the last couple of weeks, couple of months, I would really, I don't want to put you at risk by taking you into a fight on purpose.
That is very fair, and I feel the same way.
So,
I mean, I'd like some time to work on the night.
That makes sense.
And get more familiar with it so that when we end up in a combat scenario again, I know how to turn it on.
Yeah.
Just a useful small step there.
Well, you turned it on last time.
I got the hardware running. Zio turned it on. They just touched it and it woke up.
I suppose.
And I don't think I have that power.
Yeah.
So I need to look at it more.
That
and
seems smart.
I don't know if Hallie had any notes on it or anything, or any diagrams that she put together. I haven't really dug through the back of the truck.
Honestly, haven't looked. I've had other stuff on my mind.
Yeah, but staying in one place for a while gives me more time to sort through all of the stuff in the back of the truck and see if I can track down anything useful.
Yeah.
I'd like to know how it works more before putting it out there.
Yeah.
Same with the exosuit. If I'm gonna wear it, it needs some modifications and the screen's broken. And I don't know how Wyatt's dealt with it for this long. But I mean, there's plenty of things for me to fix while we're here. And I guess I could fix things for other people.
Well, and we have funding between the stack of money that I wasn't expecting from the Advantia. I guess it was worth taking Modin there. And the ridiculous pistol that Monet imparted us with. Like, we have funds, liquid and not. We have access to parts if we need them.
Yeah. And we have a place that we could stay.
We do.
Too.
Are you good with, I mean, I don't know much about the city. Organized crime ? Like, are you good with that being the place we stay?
I mean, it seems like a good first option, at least, while we look around.
I snarked to Modem about it, but I don't disagree with my own statements. We don't know anyone, and we did them a favor by protecting one of theirs. It sounds like it's a safe enough spot.
Yeah, it's at least a place to park the rig.
Yeah.
For a while.
Because I am not, with how few of us are left, I don't want to leave it unwatched.
Oh yeah, no.
If we can convince ourselves that we feel good enough about leaving it with money forgers, maybe that's a light enough crime that it's fine. I mean, not that I haven't done stuff with the Patina, too, that's depending on a certain point of view.
I mean, I don't know if the rest of the Crochet Club is anything like Monet, but if they are, I don't think they're out robbing trains.
That's true, given the opportunity.
But, I mean, when we're figuring out our way around initially having a place with a powerful crime gang, is it terrible?
It's probably a good deterrent.
Yeah.
Cassidy reaches down and takes a handful of sand and slowly drizzled it into a little small heap. I mean, that makes as much sense as anything else. It is a point one less uncertainty, is knowing that I would probably say it's safer than leaving our stuff with the Advantia.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
As much as I trust Advantia technology and other aspects of my life, the night is not... And then the way Susan was saying, it could change everything. I don't know that on the macro level that I agree with the Advantia's picture of where they want everything to be.
Yeah, no, I was comfortable with Modem. He was weird, but I don't know, he felt harmless. Like, I didn't feel concerned. He...
At the very least, sufficiently cowed by Wyatt and...
Yeah, and...
A known quantity.
And he taught me some stuff while we were traveling. So, like, I don't think I want to join the Advantia like he was trying to convince me to, but I don't have bad feelings there.
Yeah.
Didn't have great feelings with Susan.
She definitely has an agenda and probably more than the one she was holding in her hands.
I was about to make the same joke. Yeah. I don't know. I think I struggled to trust anyone who looks at the night and sees it as that type of power.
Yeah.
Or the potential for it.
And that's one of the reasons why I've stuck around, is the night is a opportunity and a responsibility. As easy as it would be to make it someone else's problem, I don't think I can do that. So, another thing with the night, though, now that we're down to so few of us that we trust to pilot, is a creative exercise for you, oh, mechanic of the Patina now.
Uh-huh.
Something for the night that I can use that's not a sword. What?
Oh. So you want to do, like, ranged?
Yeah.
Weaponry with the knight?
I suspect, having bought weapons and ammo before, trying to do a gun is out of our price range. Even in Eagle Hill, even in the land of every Advantia having their own thing. They were all weird, too. I don't even know that they were guns.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Pally was the one that put my compound bow together, and maybe, I don't know the level of machining it would take to get something bigger, but that seems like it would scale up.
Yeah. I think the concern I'd have with a bow would be just the overall dexterity of the knight. Like, we would need to look at that more to see if it was feasible for you to actually draw. Could possibly do more of a crossbow situation where you wouldn't have to deal with that. The crossbow also gives you the benefit that you have with the sword, where if one side of the knight gets injured, you can just swap over.
That's true.
To the other side. And you're not reliant on having two fully functioning arms.
Yeah. I don't know. Something to think about, I guess, while we're sitting here and working on projects, because I'm low on bullets.
Yeah. Zio did say that Pally had said that the knight had not yet reached its full potential.
This is true.
And that it could do other things, but they didn't know what those things were.
Well.
So, I mean, it's possible that one of those yet unknown abilities, functions, could provide that long-distance combat power.
Well, I will happily leave you to that one. Tell me where I can help, but...
Would a flamethrower be too close range? How far ranged do you want?
I like fighting at ranges where they can't hit me.
Okay, so maybe not a flamethrower.
But I think a flamethrower has its own uses. This is why we brought you on. This is the creativity and the open-mindedness.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know much about weaponry, so I'm not really limited by my knowledge there.
No, perfect.
If we are looking at weaponry, too, there's potential to acquire, create, forge another sword that's less piecemeal, just metal welded together, and more sworded.
Sword has pieces of our old Jeep.
Yeah, and you know, it works great, but partially because it's so much bigger than anything it's hitting.
Yeah, I think that was about the best end that Jeep could hope for. That and the shoulder of the knight. But
the shoulder does look cool.
Do you, if it has a sword, do you know enough about swords to use it? I know you have baseball skills.
I was fairly successful at using the sword as a baseball bat, but I mean, I think if we're going to be in Eagle Hill for, I don't know, 6 months, I think I would like to take some self-defense classes, or I don't know if they have a fencing school or something, but I feel like even if I'm not in the night, I would feel more confident having a sharp, pointy object.
Well,
if I had a little bit more training.
I think a sharp, pointy object does make the combat rig more effective as well.
Yes.
And then if you're at the point where you know to stick them with the pointy end, then
I do have that point figured out.
And as you plan for the future, the sun has started to angle in a way that the light reflecting off the water is less than comfortable. And Cassidy, you make breakfast, you break camp, you head back to the rig, still discussing what the future might hold. And the two of you and the knight head back into Eagle Hill to seek your fortune.
End of episode. Commencing end credits. The following information will be placed in the show notes for your added convenience. This has been A Night of Shreds and Patches, an actual play podcast using the Genesis game system from Fantasy Flight Games. The show is edited by Sydney Whittington and features the talents of Sydney Whittington as Cassidy. Sydney can be found on our Discord server, which is linked in the show notes, and on Twitter at Sydney_Wit. Cameron Robertson as Emma. Cameron can be found on Twitter at MidnightMusic13 and on Instagram at Reading_and_Dreaming. Cameron is also a player on Tabletop Squadron, a Star Wars Edge of the Empire actual play podcast, and Nick Robertson as narrator. Nick can be found on Twitter at alias58. Nick is also the GM for Tabletop Squadron, which you can support at patreon.com/tabletopsquadron. This podcast features the musical talents of Dora Violet and Arnie Parrott. You can find Dora at facebook.com/DoraViolet. You can find Arnie at atptunes.com. The official artwork for this podcast was created by Rashid Aldroca, who can be found on Instagram and ArtStation at RashidJRS. You can follow the Patina on Twitter at @akosap_podcast, or visit the website www.akosap.com. Until next time, audio offline.